Welcome back to the Wavy Podcast. I'm your host, Gemma, as well as the managing editor of thesoundtrack.ca. Today, you can see I'm here with Sebi and Jesse from Death From Above 1979, or is it Death From Above? I'm not sure what you guys are going by these days. but hey guys, how's it going?
You can call us whatever you want, just don't call us late for dinner.
How are you guys doing?
Oh my word. We're doing good. How are you doing, Sebastian? What's going on over there?
Oh, over here?
Yeah.
The usual.
Workers? Do you have workers now?
Okay. Let's let Gemma ask the questions. I don't want to talk about my day. That's all the same.
So how does it feel to be back?
Back. That's a strange way to put it. Because we never went anywhere. it feels pretty good. It's strange to release a record into a vacuum, which is how it seems to a certain extent, but it always kind of feels like that. Mm-hmm. Like pretty much any time we put out a record in the past 10 years, it happens, and then I feel like it's kind of over within a week.
Yeah.
You know, it's so, yeah, such a bizarre feeling. Sure. That is, you know, especially when it's divorced from the live show component where you go out and the songs are, without being a cheese ball, they are alive when we're playing them at a show. And so now they're, you know, it's cool to have the music be out there as our fully manifested document of how we wanted things to sound. Like, this is our statement, you know, and it's out there, and that's what people are enjoying. But it'll be a whole other animal once we're able to get out there. And the cool thing is that once we are out there playing, people will be really familiar with the material already. So it'll be cool that first, you know, the first time we play 1+1 or whatever, you know, in front mm-hmm. of people, the first time Jesse hits the harmonic on Modern Guy, people will just explode because they're going to be so excited to hear that stuff. Yeah, it's going to be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm so stoked for whenever that day comes. I have to say, you guys did a really good job at hyping it on social media back in December when you guys started posting those Instagram photos one by one. And I remember people were getting like really pissed in the comments. And I just thought it was hilarious.
There weren't really that many people that were pissed. It was just, we were kind of playing into it as well and responding to it, because it was more fun than just being like, constantly being yay. It was more fun to be like, shut up.
Yeah. But it worked, you know what I mean? They're paying attention and got them engaged as well. So
my favorite part was how people were like mad at us for posting. They were mad because we weren't giving them something. And I remember Sebastian being like, but this is how you use Instagram. You're supposed to post photos. That's what we're doing. We're using it properly.
God forbid we post photos on Instagram.
I know. Oh my God. It was so funny. I'm curious, what were you guys listening to when you guys were creating this album?
I wasn't listening to anything. I was listening to only this. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Nice. Okay.
The only thing I would say is that when I was mastering it, I used the song where the whole Fire in Negative EP by Perk was my sonic reference, which if you listen to is harder than the hardest moment in any of our songs, but it's also so bare. There's so much space in it, and it worked out pretty well.
Awesome. What new elements instrumentally or approaches to songwriting did you take with this album?
I wouldn't say we used anything new.
Yeah, it's more, this was more like the original way we would make songs, is just playing in a room together and recording, and then when something got us excited, that was the start of the song. And like that's how we made pretty much everything in the past. And even when we work remotely, it's still kind of like that. Like, you know, I sent Sebastian the piano in Love Letter, but I sent him a different chorus thing. He made the chorus, but like, you know, it's the same type of thing we would do in a room where it's like, hey, I've got this idea. And then you respond to it, you react to it, and you just sort of, you know, it's like two people working on a sculpture. It's like, oh, I chip a bit, and it's like, oh, wait, I got an idea that could be an arm, or you know what I mean? And then the next person holds the chisel.
One thing that I did do, which on our very first LP, You're a Woman, I'm a Machine, we recorded in the studio, and they had all this, you know, these boxes of great percussion instruments. And so we just put percussion on everything, you know, after we were done laying down the, you know, the drums and the bass, it, like one of us would run in there and play the bongos or play the tambourine, whatever it was, you know.
There's a lot of conga on that record.
Yeah, yeah. Conga, because it was there. And so, and because I was, I wanted us to get kind of in that same frame of mind on this record, I went out to professional drums on Vine in Hollywood and bought some percussion. I bought, you know, little bongos those little bongos that ended up being on 1+1, the tune, like ding ding ding.
Yeah.
Those are just bongos. So I kind of, you know, that's not new for us, but certainly it was something that a layer that I intended to, you know, at least to inspire something. So I would have that stuff around. And then I had like a milk crate with a bunch of tambourines and stuff. And so when we were recording, you know, Jesse would go, oh, that's cool. Yeah. And do some weird tambourine hit. And then that would, you know, motivate something else in the song. So that's not unusual for us, but I wanted to make sure that all those toys were around so that we could, every time you put a sound on a song, it unlocks something new. And even because of the way we work, where we make the music first to a certain point, and then I add the vocals and write the song layer on top of it, and then that starts demanding other things on top of it. So but you know, let's say in Free Animal, I don't know if I would have sang that way had Jesse not recorded the tambourine that way, you know. So it's each little sound inspires something new. Yeah.
Right.
If he played a different tambo part, I probably would have done something different.
Right. Yeah. It all plays off each other.
Whenever you've ever asked me to play tambourine, that's the part that I first want to play. Like,
well, I'm glad.
Just like eighths or sixteenths never satisfy me. I always want to do that. I always want to do the, is it Taxman or?
Yeah. Yeah.
I always want to do that tambourine.
Yeah.
What are some key pieces of gear, maybe name like one or two that were used on this album, maybe like a synth or something, if you're open to sharing?
The Univox, the Minicorg is a synthesizer.
Dude, did you see what I sent you?
Yeah, I haven't checked it out yet, but they've reissued this synthesizer. But a friend of mine, Tim Glasgow, he's an engineer, great engineer, works with Nile Rodgers and Sonic Youth and all these people. And I was making a record. This is, you know, maybe almost, yeah, it's like 10, 12 years ago. And he lent me this keyboard. He was like, you'll really enjoy this. It's really freaky because it does weird stuff. And you can't, there's no presets. You have to, you know, you set it to the way you want it. And the keyboard was kind of the first commercially available keyboard, like the first keyboard that cost about $400 that you could buy in a store. It cost about as much as a guitar, because before that, synthesizers were really, really expensive. People, mm-hmm. only like people in really famous bands could afford them, you know, like the Beatles and Yes, and like all these big bands in the 70s. And this is the first keyboard that some kid could afford. And there's that that really great song, Warm Leatherette by The Normal. Warm Leatherette. Leatherette. It's all that keyboard. And also The Cure's first record is kind of all that keyboard. Anyway, all this to say, it's a great keyboard. We've used it on the last three records, but because I only have three keyboards in my studio, it got a lot of play.
Awesome. Got a lot of play. Thanks for sharing. Do you guys each have a song you're most proud of on the record?
No, I don't. I mean, that's like picking a favorite part of a painting. I mean, except there's no background on this one, really. It's like a painting where everything is in the foreground. It's all part of, this record only makes sense to me all together. Like it's an album, and it's an album together. If the whole album had sounded like any one of the songs, it would have been fine, but it wouldn't be the same experience at all. It would be like, I don't know. I think it would be almost fatiguing. Even if it was like one of the softest ones, you would only have so much energy for it. But I think, you know, I mean, it's not on purpose and it's not because of this, but like in terms of the way we consume music, like how it almost seems as though the default with like Spotify is shuffle, you know? And so there is no one song on this record that encapsulates the record. There's songs that have meaning to us in terms of like how the record came together, or songs that inspired more. I can't believe how fucking dusty I am.
This is not high res.
Okay. Yeah, I can't tell.
I can see in my camera, I can see I was moving shit. The record is a song, you know?
Yeah.
We're an album band, and we actually, before deciding to make this record, we had discussed the concept of just releasing singles, or, you know, one or two or three songs at a time, doing kind of small little burst releases. And that was something that excited us at the time. But then when the prospect of making an LP came along, that's kind of like, that's our art is the LP. And I think more than the other ones, at least more than the last two, this one felt really like a cohesive LP, because most of the songs were recorded in this very small room together, side by side. And then the record told us what it was. And then we filled in, there were a few little blanks, like the B side of the record, I wanted it to have a certain feeling, and we hadn't captured that in the studio together. And so we went back and worked together again to get that conclusion to the story of the record, and to get the B side, which I don't think the A side is as impactful without the B side. I think you need the dichotomy. You need both those. It doesn't balance if it's like Jesse was saying, you know, if every song was NYC Power Elite Part One, it'd be incredible. It'd be a Ramones record, but it wouldn't be a Death From Above record.
For sure. Yeah. And the B side, I really like how it carries it out. I find it's a little more, slower, which I like that a lot.
Slower. And
we would never
song on the record.
Yeah, yeah, the noisiest song. We had kind of a slow song, kind of, I guess Black History Month is kind of a slow song on the first LP, but really what we went on tour with the Deftones for a whole summer, or at least what felt like an entire summer.
Amazing.
And after we came back, Jesse started writing these like super slow riffs, and I was like, I was into it. I thought it was cool. Like he wrote Caught Up after that, and from the last record, and Moonlight, and he was like, was I just incepted with slow mosh music because of being on tour with Deftones for weeks and weeks and weeks? I think it was. I think it was just like, because, you know, they're pretty like,
yeah, you
know,
yeah,
which isn't really our tempo, but I guess now it is.
I like stuff like that. I listen to way slower music at times, but I'd, you know, just not gone into it. I guess I've just gradually been getting slower in rock music and faster in dance music. That's I've just been like this for many years now.
I have to say, I love the influence, or at least to me, it sounds like, of dance music on the song Glass Homes. Would you guys say there's an influence of dance music a bit on that?
I mean, we both, Jesse is a professional dance music artist. So
that's such a funny way to put it.
Yeah, but there was, you know, we were, I keep saying, you know, and you don't know, because I'm going to tell you right now. But there were a couple of days in the studio where I would encourage Jesse to leave the bass on the stand so we could explore synth sounds. And Jesse really loves arpeggios. So that song, the synth line is driving the song, and the you know that you don't know, I'm telling you, that arpeggio that's you know trotting along is what inspired the drum beat. I picked up a shaker and just played kick snare and shaker, and it was the synthesizer that told us what to do there.
Got it. Yeah.
I mean, I think it would to say that it's dance inspired is maybe too vague. There's like something very, very like more 80s New York disco influence, which has always been an influence on our band. Like the early no wave stuff was a huge influence on our band, you know, whether it's like the Screamers or anything like that, where it's very hard to define what that music is. Like people might call it punk, but it's really, it has so little in common with like Exploited or something, you know, like the, or Fear. It's not like that. These are totally different worlds, but there was a lot of people in the early 80s where even like, I would say like Dinosaur L and stuff like that, where you're sort of, it's hard to, you know, it's that New York no wave sound that's like sort of dance, sort of punk, sort of like a lot of things. Was it like, that's a big influence on me still now. I mean, it's a big influence on even like the band reference, that the synth reference that Seb was talking about, like, oh, you know, Warm Leatherette. It's like, yeah, that's a it's from the same time. That no wave sound is like, it's weird though, it's weird to say that it's an influence, but I don't think the sound is ever, it's never like, we've never made a song like that. But in terms of the sonic palette and how things get put together, for sure, that, you know, that has to be an influence. It's in there.
Got it. Seb, what is your approach to screaming, and how do you keep your voice healthy when like recording this stuff and touring, I guess, too?
I don't really do so much of the screaming anymore. The reason I screamed earlier in our career is because I was trying to sing and I couldn't do it live. So I would just end up screaming, which was its own thing, you know, and I, it is what it is. But even on this record, I mean, touring even, there's like a couple of screams in the show, let's say Black History Month or Romantic Rights, there's kind of a scream in that song. I bat about 500 with those, you know, it's like every second night I can pull it off. But it's not my natural voice mode. And so it takes a lot of priming, and on a song like Totally Wiped Out, I wanted that kind of shrieky sound, and I was trying to do it, and I just couldn't pull it off. Maybe if I had been touring for 2 weeks and playing every night, I could do it. But we invited our friend Jordan Bliley from the Blood Brothers in Past Lives, and I can't remember his other band at the moment.
The big one? Yeah. The one with all the people on it? Head Wound City?
Head Wound City, sorry, yeah. Great band, amazing band. But he naturally has that great scream, and he came in, walked in, I put a microphone on him, he made that sound, and then we took a selfie together and he left. And you know, that was it. So I generally don't go for that sound so much anymore. But I will say, voice health is very important to me, especially when we're on the road touring. And we were touring with At the Drive-In a couple of years ago, I was talking to the singer about to Cedric about vocal warm-ups, and he was saying that he has anxiety dreams about where he shows up at a show and he hasn't warmed up and he's got to hit the stage. And I have the exact same dream, except I have that dream plus the one where I'm a drummer and my sticks are spaghetti.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally wiped out. It was one of my favorite songs on the record. I guess one last question for you guys. What would you say is the ideal setting to listen to this record in, or activity? For me, it's high intensity interval training. Yeah, perfect. It's amazing.
Actually, I was at the hardware store in the little village I live in, and the woman that was checking me out said, I hope I have the right person. 1+1 is my kitchen song. I said, oh, that's good. She goes, yeah, I put it on and dance around the kitchen, and my kids are getting sick of it. So apparently it's a good kitchen song for moms.
I'll try that one out. Not a mom, but maybe it'll work.
Maybe you'll become a mom if you listen to it enough.
I got recognized on the weekend down the street while I was like looking at a house for my cousin that he was thinking about buying. And the real estate agent was like, hey, I don't mean to bother you, but he wasn't in great shape. So I don't think it's his kitchen song. Or maybe he
you don't move to a small town to be anonymous, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, guys, thank you so much for your time. Really enjoyed this conversation. Love the new record. To everyone listening, make sure you check it out on all listening platforms. Buy it on vinyl. And thank you guys so much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.